This is an I Am Listening original podcast.
So they will check typically 3 months bank statements to make sure that your money is going into your bank account and 3 months pay slips. Well, that's great if you're employed, but what about if you're self-employed? If you're self-employed, they'll look at 2 years trading and your profit from those 2 years working. And they'll work out then what they're available to give to you, and B, how much that repayment will be. So whilst it sounds onerous, it's important that you are able to prove that you are able to repay.
Welcome to Series 2 of the Property Podcast with Wards and me, Gary Wilson, the weekly podcast where I'll share with you all the latest Kent property news, as well as speaking with industry professionals to offer advice and tips that will hopefully help make your house move journey a little less stressful. Welcome to episode 4 of the Property Podcast with Wards, Series 2. Today's episode is all about first-time mortgages. So this is a biggie, and we've got a very special guest, Gavin Welch, Financial Services Director at Wards. Thank you, first of all, Gavin, for coming in and sharing your knowledge and know-how with us. Let's dive straight in. We're talking mortgages for people who probably haven't had a mortgage before or dealings with mortgages. So let's start with the very, very basic. What's a mortgage? Because it sounds scary.
Yeah, and it's designed to be scary a little bit, Gary, because there's lots of different financial points to it. But a mortgage really is just a large loan over a period of time. So if you think about a car loan, typically over 5 years, a mortgage is a loan over probably 25 to 35 years to allow you to buy your first property or property with a financial rate that's lower than the normal rates that are out there for loans. So in a nutshell, long loan over a long period of time with a smaller interest rate.
Yes. Okay, so that's a mortgage, but there's more than one flavour of mortgage. There's all different kinds of mortgages. What are they? How do you steer people through them? What's good for first-time buyers in the Kent property market especially?
It's a great question, Gary. There's lots of sort of parts to that. I guess the easiest way to explain it for a first-time buyer is that, number one, you're going to need to have a deposit. Normally 5%, and therefore you've got your opportunity then to talk to lenders about different schemes for first-time buyers. There are plenty out there. There are sort of schemes that will allow your parents to have savings put aside just to make sure that you carry on paying your mortgage, or guarantee to pay your mortgage on a monthly basis. But there's also housing schemes out there. So the one I can think of, first of all, is the First Home Scheme, which may allow you to buy a property at 30% less than the market value. But there's also first mortgages on new builds, where you may have a cheaper interest rate. The best advice I can give any first-time buyer is think about your deposit, make sure you've got your deposit together, and then you can start to look at what's out there for you.
And you talk about deposit being set up and maybe having parents, if you're lucky enough to act as guarantors, kind of. But are there any other specific things, any other criteria and qualifications that buyers, perhaps specifically in Kent, should be aware of when they're looking at all the different kinds of mortgages?
Yeah, I guess if I'm sitting down with a first-time buyer, first of all, as I said earlier, have you got your deposit? 5% is a minimum. Then you need to look at your income. So if it's a sole income, it's your income times about 4.5 times your salary. If it's joint income, you add the joint incomes together, and again, about four and a half times your salary. You have to take into consideration any loans or any credit cards, but that'll give you sort of a figure that you can start to look at when you're looking at property. So you add your deposit to your joint income that's been times by 4.5, and that gives you a ballpark figure. And then you start to look at, you know, what types of interest rates are available to you. But the most important part, have you got your deposit and is there a good income coming through?
Back in the good old days, people could wander in, so say the tales, and say, I need a mortgage. And they'd say, lovely, how much is the house? Here's the mortgage offer. Have a lovely day. Well done. Enjoy your new home. Obviously now there's a lot of checking up. I mean, as a little extra, just me being kind of interested in that aspect of it, are people surprised at how rigorous they're going to be looked at very, very closely, almost under a microscope, by everything that their finances do? Are people surprised by that, especially first timers? Is it like, wow, they need to know what we're spending on this, that and the other?
I think the answer to that is, you know, it's quite easy to get credit nowadays, and it has been for some time. But you've got to be thinking about, okay, look, I'm going to want to borrow a lot of money, and the bank is going to be a little bit shrewd in making sure it gets its money back. So they will check typically 3 months bank statements to make sure that your money is going into your bank account, and 3 months pay slips. Well, that's great if you're employed, but what about if you're self-employed? If you're self-employed, they'll look at 2 years trading and your profit from those 2 years working. And they'll work out then what they're available to give to you, and B, how much that repayment will be. So whilst it sounds onerous, it's important that you are able to prove that you are able to repay the mortgage.
And the thing is, with the way everything's on the internet now, there's nothing people won't know about pretty much what you did yesterday and had for tea. So, I was just interested in how many people that might kind of catch up. With interest rates and repayment structures varying for all the different types of mortgage they might get in the first-time buyer scenario, what implications do they have, those differences, for like the long-term planning?
Yeah, it's something that you would need to sit down with your mortgage advisor and talk through. And that's why I would always recommend seeing an advisor, not necessarily going directly to a bank. And what you'll do is you'll walk through your finances, so your plans for the future. So, for instance, if you've got you and a partner or you and a friend that are moving into a property, how long do you think you're going to be in that property? How much are you willing to put down as a deposit? And what are your financial plans? That could be that you're just setting up a new home, planning on having a family. Okay, so what income are we going to get? And therefore, what will our income be in a couple of years' time if one of us is working and one of us is on maternity leave? Is the flat, if you're going for a flat, big enough to house that? Or are you going to have to move a second time? So your finances and your plans for the future are really crucial in deciding what your rates are. Best rate that I would say for first-time buyers is a fixed rate. Why do I say that? Well, that guarantees your payment, monthly payment, will be the same amount every month for a period of time, giving you the surety to be able to budget. There are tracker rates, there are variable rates, but for a first-time buyer, I would always say get used to paying your monthly mortgage at the same rate every month, and you haven't got anything to worry about.
That's really good advice. And that's what we're all about on the podcast here. So before people get into mortgages, there is, as we've discussed a little bit already, the history, and we're talking credit scores. Do you know yours? How does it have an impact on your mortgage? How can you improve it? We'll answer that question next.
As Kent's local independent estate agent, Wards utilise years of experience and expertise to promote your property in the best possible light to the largest possible audience. For more information, receive an online valuation in less than 30 seconds or book an in-person appraisal of your property with us today, head over to wardsofkent.co.uk to find out more about our unique approach.
Welcome back. We're talking to Gavin, who has all our mortgage questions answered for you today, including sort of pre-mortgage stuff. So we're talking, this is something I don't think people, I don't even know how long it's been a thing, but nowadays people have their credit scores on their phone. It's a thing that you carry around with you. You know a number, a lot of people know that number. But what impact will that credit score have on someone trying to get a mortgage? What can people do to, you know, make it look a bit better for everyone?
So a credit score really is just the history of the credit you've had and where you've been living. And what that is designed to do is to prove that if you have borrowed, that you're good for the money and that you pay it back on a monthly basis and that you're on time every time. And if you do that, then you get a good credit score, i.e. you're not so risky. You are paying back money that you've borrowed over a period of time. Yes, the score is important. How do you improve a score? Well, if you've got debt, pay it back. If you are setting out and you haven't got any credit, then there's something to think about. There is a need for you to prove that you are good for the money that you're asking the lender. That won't stop you getting a mortgage if you haven't got any credit cards or loans. And on the backside of that, if you've had poor credit in the past where you've perhaps forgotten to pay a bill, typically a phone bill, then there are things that we can that lenders can do to make sure that they mitigate against that. And if it was a blip and it was 2, 3, 4 years ago, lenders are pretty good at saying, okay, it was a blip and we're happy to lend you money. But the credit score is important because the lenders will look at that to say, are you good for the money you're going to want to borrow from us, and are you likely to pay it back?
Another question that's been sent into us is about repayment charges or exit fees, because when you're starting something, you often are a bit blinkered about what's at the end of that same thing. You get excited about the start of something new, but they're obviously something to be aware of, and I imagine they differ as well. This question says, do they differ depending on the lender?
The simple answer is yes, they do differ. Think about what an exit fee or what a repayment fee would be. That's because you've had a good rate. It's been a preferential rate that the bank has offered you and given you. And halfway through that, or a third of the way, or two thirds through that scheme, you've decided that you want to repay that. The lender will charge you a repayment fee, effectively a fine, for coming out of that deal. Now, with interest rates as they are at the moment going up and down, sometimes it is preferential to come out of a deal and go on to a new deal. But you have to be really careful. There could be some sizable repayments that you're going to have to make to come out of that deal, i.e. a fine. Most lenders will allow you to overpay 10% of your debt on a yearly basis. So if you want to overpay, you can. But most lenders will, as I say, charge you a fee because giving you a preferential rate, i.e. they're not going to make as much money out of you if you were going to be with them for 25, 30 years.
So they get
and
some
therefore,
of that back.
They want to get some of that back. Yeah,
for sure. There's another question. What should I consider when looking at long-term affordability of my mortgage? For example, interest rate changes and income stability, they're wondering. Now, we kind of touched on that. You always advising fixed is the way to go because, you know, all right, it might not be the best deal. You might, you know, because no one knows over time, it might cost you more money. But if it's fixed, you know, that's coming out every month for the next however long time. But is there anything else relating to that side of things that this person that's sending the question should consider?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the answer is one for each individual, and that is if you can afford to pay this mortgage on a monthly basis, you're not too stretched, you can still live life. Whilst you might have a house, you'll still want to socialise and go out. You don't want to be, you know, a prisoner in your own home. As long as you can afford that monthly payment and you're happy with it, then you can fix that for a period of time, 2, 3, 5, sometimes even 10 years. My advice has always been, if you're comfortable with paying it and you know you're going to stay put in that house for a good long period of time, then have that in your mind when you're fixing your deal. Interest rates change regularly. The media go mad when, you know, interest rates rises or falls or things like that. You haven't got to worry about that. And you can put your head on the pillow at night knowing that you can pay that payment.
Obviously, that's the going outside of your monthly money. The coming inside of it is different. Obviously, that's kind of outside your scope. But as far as people worrying about their income stability, as this questioner puts it, what kind of things can mitigate that? How can you help on that side of things with people who maybe are self-employed? So many different kinds of jobs and workplaces at the moment are changing. There's so much, you know, on the horizon where things are going to definitely be changing, AI coming in or whatever it might be, and people might be sort of looking at that with one eye down the road. Is there anything, you know, that you can do to sort of mitigate any of those things?
Yeah, Gary, I think, first of all, income fluctuation. Self-employed, you've got an income over a year period. And again, if you can afford your monthly payment on the worst of your months, then you know where you're going to be standing. Things like you not being able to work for an illness. There are protection policies that you can take out, i.e. income protection plans that protect your income should you not be paid at work if you're off sick, for instance. So certainly worth looking into those, because it happens regularly. You know, we don't think we're going to have an accident, and we do. So it's important that you finer points your mortgage and perhaps your expenditure is covered. As for the future, no one can you know, see the future, but it's always good to be thinking, if I've got this money aside and I can afford it and on the income I'm on, I'm going to be safe, then there's another peace of mind there for you.
Yeah, okay. So, Gavin, before we finish the poddy for today, how about some tips and advice for first-time buyers in Kent navigating that mortgage application process, making sure it's successful, securing the best terms for them as well on their property purchase? You've got some golden rules for us, and I love some golden rules. This is great. What have you got for us?
Yeah, I mean, for me, there's a number of golden rules. Number one, make sure that you've understood your own finances and you know how much you can afford on a monthly basis. Once that's achieved, number two, you need to get an agreement in principle. Lenders will do this for you, but mortgage advisors are the best people to go to because they have access to most of the lenders on the high street. When you get an agreement in principle, it's almost like a bag of money, Gary, for you to go out and spend. And that's like a, if your figures are correct, we will be happy to lend you this amount of money. There are mortgage advisors out there charge for an AIP. And one of my biggest golden rules is don't have to pay for an AIP. So no fee, AIP. You don't want to spend money yet because you haven't found a house. Part three to these golden rules is a simple one. Register with all the local estate agents. Don't rely on Rightmove or other property portals to find the property for you. Estate agents know when there's going to be a property coming available, and if you're ready to go and you're able to borrow the amount that's needed, then registering with an estate agent will get you in front of everybody else. Don't rely on property portals. And then once you have found that property, you need to be ready to sign that mortgage. So get all of your paperwork in order quickly, your bank statements, your pay slips, anything else that the mortgage advisor needs, and get that ready and raring to go. And then the seller will feel much more comfortable that you're ready and that you are wanting to buy their house. And then you should be what we would class as a hot customer and ready to purchase. So those are my golden rules.
I love the golden rules. I also want a placard that says no fee, AIP. That's what I want. I'm going to march with one of those. Gavin, all brilliant stuff. Thank you so much for all of that. Don't forget, it's always a good idea to consult with a financial advisor, solicitor or estate agent to help you navigate the home buying process and answer any additional questions you might have. Thanks again to our special guest on this podcast, Gavin Welch, Financial Services Director, for sharing his insights and expertise. You can check out this episode or previous episodes at im-listening.co.uk or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to check out the property podcast with Wards next week. See you then, and make sure you hit the subscribe button. Thanks for listening to the Property Podcast with Wards. If you'd like more information on the subjects that we've covered in this week's episode, just head over to the Wards website at wardsofkent.co.uk, or you can follow us on our social media channels. You can check out our latest episodes at im-listening.co.uk or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
This has been an I Am Listening exclusive podcast. For more information, head over to our website, im-listening.co.uk.